Instruction to typist. Please would you type this document, not in the usual manner, on successive lines, but with a spacing of, shall we say, 4 empty lines between each line of typewriting and the next line thereafter. This to permit subsequent alterations, because the document has to be submitted for checking to a solicitor, and any solicitor's comments will have to be interspersed, and the document will then have to be retyped. It will probably be returned to for retyping. So initially, please just do it in rough. Making sure there's plenty of space between lines for the insertion, if necessary, in large handwriting of any alterations or substitutions. The body of the document now starts. I feel it will be best if in the first instance I introduce myself to the reader. My name is Captain Maurice Seddon, Royal Signals retired, and though you don't know me at all, it's very possible that there will be some of you who will read this document who will already have seen me on BBC One television, BBC Two television, ITV, or Channel 4 television, or you may have heard me on any one of a number of occasions on Radio 4, on such programmes as the midweek programme with Libby Purvis. Equally, if you live abroad, you may quite easily have seen me on Australian television several times, Swedish television, Japanese television, West German television several times, I am myself half German, Berlin television, CBS New York television, RTE Dublin television, Japanese television Fuji Tokyo, and could have heard me on Westdeutscher Rundfunk and seen me and heard me on many other radio and television programmes. Equally, you may have read about me in a 3-page article in the Sunday Times magazine, or in a large article in The Guardian, or indeed in the local press, in both the local papers in the Slough and Windsor area from time to time. I am, in effect, a boffin, an inventor of electrically heated clothing and other items. I should perhaps next explain to you the background to this incident. Something of the order of 10 or 15 years ago, I personally, on the basis of do-it-yourself, actually used myself dry cleaning equipment in an establishment named Launderama, which is the same name as the business of which I am now complaining in this document, but in fact the two establishments, as far as I'm aware, have nothing to do with one another. And I did this at Launderama, which then existed in Arthur Road in Windsor. It may be the case that at that time the Launderama name was, as it was at one time, an American franchise with numerous branches. Be this as it may, I personally used the dry cleaning apparatus at Launderama, Arthur Road, Windsor, specifically for the dry cleaning of articles containing down feathers, such as eiderdowns and down-filled sleeping bags, and I can personally testify that these operations were in all cases entirely successful, and they were quite unattended by any form of disaster whatsoever. And this is important, as you will see, because it links up with the following. Now, on Tuesday the 1st of March 1988, it happened that the washerwoman, who for 10 or 15 or 20 years past has been doing my washing, had fallen over and broken her wrist, and her arm was in plaster. And for that reason, she was unable to do that my washing, and only for that reason did I have reason to visit the Launderama establishment, which I had never previously been to, at the Harrow Market, number 14, the Harrow Market, in Langley. And when I arrived there in the late afternoon, I was met by a helpful young woman, I suppose about 30 or 35 years of age, wearing glasses, and I was too busy to concern myself with the matter at all, and I therefore delegated the washing and the dry cleaning to her. I gave her one load of washing, and I gave her one rather expensive West German eiderdown, which had been given to me by a present by an elderly German aunt some years ago, and asked her to dry clean this item. I did not concern myself with examining any of the machines or reading any of the notices. I concerned myself solely in speaking with this woman. This woman initially said to me, and this comment, as far as I'm aware, referred only to the washing and not to the dry cleaning, that inasmuch as it was after 4:30 in the afternoon, she wasn't, strictly speaking, supposed to accept washing on the basis of what is called a service wash, by which they evidently mean that the washing is done for you and you come back and get it later. However, I gave her a £1 coin for her own trouble and told her I would give her something more for her own trouble when I returned, in addition, of course, to paying the bill for the washing and the dry cleaning when I returned. And she agreed to do these things, and I left her to get on with it. And I immediately left the premises and took no further action in anything that took place there at all. Later, as arranged, I returned to the premises. And on returning, this young woman was no longer to be seen. I would like to emphasize that the young woman had been entirely helpful and cooperative, and the last thing I want to do is to get her into any trouble. The more so as I understand that she had only been in the place for 3 weeks and didn't know the ropes. When I returned, I found instead of her a man whom I had not previously seen, a man of middle age, of rather portly appearance, rather heavily built, of medium height, wearing glasses, with a bald pate on the back of his head, wearing a woollen pullover and grey flannel trousers. And this man was in an ever-escalating frenzied fury. Looking back with at the thing with hindsight, I'm bound to say there was a comical element, but I didn't see the comical element at the time. This man, in ever-increasing frenzy, was battling helplessly, with his hands flapping up and down like the wings of a bird, surrounded by a great floating cloud of extremely light weight. Best quality West German downs of eider, which were so light they were almost as light as the air itself, and they were floating around him like little balloons or gas-filled bubbles, and in no way was he able to master them or get control of them, which he appeared to be trying hopelessly to do. And as the problem became increasingly and obviously insoluble by the method he was using, so instead of calming down, he became more and more frenziedly excited and angry because he couldn't catch these down feathers, which were floating all round him in a cloud. And every time he moved his arms with great rapidity, the wind that the arm movement set up merely served to exacerbate the problem, in that the downs flew even higher and further. At first, I simply gazed in horrified amazement at the remains of my precious German eiderdown, which apparently had burst inside his machine. I said nothing. I left him to initiate all the speaking. At once, he attacked me verbally in the most ferocious, aggressive, abusive, unpleasant manner that can be managed, that can be imagined. He said nothing that was in any way helpful. He said such things as, "Get out, get out, get out! I will fetch the police to put you out of my shop!" and things in this vein. He then demanded payment of £4 for cleaning the eiderdown. I firmly and politely declined, saying I would not dream of paying you £4 for ruining something which has a value of somewhere between £100 and £200. Incidentally, checking up with German manufacturers since the event has revealed the fact that the cost of replacing will be more likely to be between £200 and £300 than between £100 and £200. He said that the eiderdown should not have been put into the machine. He pointed out the presence of a clear notice, which I was then able to observe and read, which clearly stated that eiderdowns and certain other articles were not suitable for cleaning in his machine. Clearly, inasmuch as I was not concerned in operating the machine, I was also not concerned in reading the notice, because I had nothing to do with the machine. I delegated the entire operation to the employee of the establishment, who did not mention to me with one word that there was any question of unsuitability on the part of eiderdowns for being cleaned in the machine. The poor woman, being new to the place, evidently did not know this. Now, I do not wish to blame her at all, because if the man had behaved towards me in a reasonable way and had been apologetic, I might very well have said, accidents can happen, forget it. But under the circumstances where he behaved as atrociously as he did, and you will hear more of this in a moment, I would not dream of reacting in that way, because his behaviour was quite outrageous. At a certain point, shortly after this, the young woman put on her coat and left the premises, having evidently finished her day's work there, and leaving the washing still in the machine, which had not yet stopped washing. In due course it did stop, and when I heard it stop, I asked the man politely, perfectly civilly and correctly, will you be kind enough to give me 20 pence piece change for 2 10-pence pieces so that I may operate the drying machine. Get out of my shop, out of my shop, get out, I don't want you here. Go to the bank, go to the bank. By this time it was about 5:45. I said to him, do you imagine that a bank would give me change at 5:45? Whereupon I went out into the road and was constrained to obtain 20 pence change on one occasion in the next door butcher's shop from the manager there, who kindly gave it me, and on another occasion a further 20 pence, because I needed it twice, from a young woman standing on the pavement outside the dry cleaning establishment. I transferred the clothing from the washing machine to the drying machine, inserted the 20 pence piece. Not being familiar with the use of any of the apparatus in that shop, I turned for advice and information and guidance to the only other client in the shop, a woman in her 30s, who was also washing clothing there. She showed me kindly how the machine was operated, and I set it in motion. The moment I spoke to her, and on every subsequent occasion on which I spoke to her, on a total of several occasions, the owner or proprietor of the shop, as he turned out to be, or is presumed to be, came towards us with a threatening expression upon his face and a threatening attitude altogether, saying to me such questions, asking of me such questions as, are you, and then he used one of the following verbs, and I'm not sure which one it was, harassing, troubling, pestering, annoying my customer. To which I replied firmly, I am most certainly not, and then used the same verb again, your customer, and will you kindly leave us in peace? We are at liberty to converse if we wish. Nevertheless, every time I spoke to her, or she to me, he again advanced with lowering brow upon us, as though we were naughty schoolchildren who were speaking out of turn. It was a quite extraordinary experience. At a certain point, I said to him in the most polite and formal possible way, I shall be grateful, sir, if you will kindly give me the address of your head office, as I need to communicate with it. Reply, I am the head office. May I, sir, please know your name? Reply, I am the man without a name. I am Jesus Christ. In due course, I concluded my business in the shop, and I left the shop. And having totally finished there, and having no reason to return, I went into the adjacent butcher's shop. And this has the telephone number Slough 45914. And I spoke there with the only person still present, a Mr. Dave Wright, who was temporarily managing the shop, being in fact the manager from some other branch elsewhere. I said to him, I wonder if you can be kind and help me. I've just had a perfectly awful experience in the next door shop at the hands of the manager of the dry cleaning and laundrette establishment. Oh, he said, we know all about him. I have been told by one of the men who works in this butcher's shop that he is known to be exceedingly rude. He is Australian, is he not? And I said, well, my impression also is that he is Australian, and he is more than exceedingly rude. He is indescribably rude. Shortly after this, I was pursued and harassed by the proprietor, the Jesus Christ, the man without a name, who came rushing out of the laundrette establishment into the butcher's shop. He stood at the door and cried in a loud voice to the butcher, pointing at me at arm's length, and in a very loud shout, this man is stark, staring, raving mad. Whereupon he turned on his heel, rushed out of the shop, and dashed back into the laundrette. We both looked at one another in considerable surprise. About 1 minute later, when I was still conversing with the butcher, the dry-cleaning man, the Jesus Christ, the man without a name, rushed in again, and this time cried out to me. Had I told the butcher's manager that I had not yet paid him the £4 for the cleaning of the eiderdown? I replied, the same reply that I had already given him in his shop, that I would not dream of paying him £4 for ruining something of value well in excess of 100. I've added that he would be hearing from my solicitor, and further added that if he continued in that present vein, he would also be hearing from the police. At this juncture, he suddenly, and with great agility, for a man of such weight, rushed headlong at me. I quite thought he was going to attack me. Lying immediately in front of me, between me and him, there were two sacks. One was a black bin liner sack, which he had given me, for which, by the way, he had asked to be paid in his shop, and I had declined to pay him for it. This had served to contain the ruined remains, the wreckage of what once had been an eiderdown, which, as he had interrupted the dry-cleaning cycle at some indeterminate point, was extremely heavy, being sodden with solvent. Also in front of me was a transparent, high-quality polythene sack, which I had brought myself, which contained the washing. Having dashed up to me, he seized from the floor the black plastic bin liner which he had given me, containing the wrecked remains of the eiderdown, rushed back to the door, and said that if I did not pay him, he would keep this, by which he meant the black sack containing the ruin of the eiderdown. I once more said that he would be hearing from my solicitors. Again he rushed headlong at me till he was about 1 metre from me, and with all strength possible hurled the black sack from the level of his chest directly into my face, so that the bag struck my face with the heavy, sodden, overweight eiderdown, sopping wet with solvent inside, and this had the effect of squashing painfully my nose. It was not a severe injury, it was just a temporary, short-lived, painful experience, and a great shock. I think it's the first time I have ever been assaulted in my life. Let me just go back a little and mention, for the record, that when I left these items at the laundrette with the young woman, she gave me two little dockets, which I have before me now, two little tiny forms, almost like little vouchers, I suppose you'd call them. One refers to the dry cleaning of the eiderdown and reads Service Wash 03663, name, to pay, cash, £4.30. The next one reads Service Wash, and this one refers to the washing of the clothing, 03664, name, to pay. And there is something which is really not very legible, which may or may not be 90 pence. In the event I actually paid the man for the washing, that which he asked me to pay him, namely £1.20, plus a further 20 pence for the washing powder, and I inserted in addition two successive 20 pence coins into the drying machine. In due course, I telephoned Langley Police Station, where I spoke with P.C. Russell, and I informed P.C. Russell of the circumstances and asked him whether this incident did or did not constitute an assault. And he replied that it constituted what is known as common assault, which is not a thing sufficiently serious for the police to take action upon, because for that to be necessary, it would have to be accompanied by actual bodily harm, which clearly it was not. He said that if I wanted to take action in the matter of the assault, it would have to be handled through a solicitor, which clearly it is not worth doing. However, it is perfectly clear that this matter must be brought to the notice of all those who have the interest at heart of, one, the good reputation of the dry cleaning laundrette industry, two, the good reputation of Australian people generally. Now, in this connection, I would like to say that I personally have the best possible rapport with the Australians. I have been the subject of no less than 3 successive and separate documentary films which have been broadcast on Australian television. 2 of them around about 1984-1985, the third one on August the 6th, 1987. The Australians I met in this connection were charming and very nice people. I enjoyed having them around me and working with them, and they apparently enjoyed me very much on their television as well. Quite recently, I have sold to Australia one of the very oldest Volkswagen Beetle motor cars, namely one of 1946-47, and my relationships with the people I was dealing with in Australia in that connection were extremely harmonious, very friendly, and thoroughly satisfactory. And I would hate this latest incident with this man who appears to be an Australian, Jesus Christ, or otherwise the man without a name, to spoil this very nice rapport. Also, I consider that this report should be of interest to anyone concerned with local news in the area of Datchet and Langley, Slough and Windsor, because I feel that the public have to be protected against this kind of behaviour. If it were the case that this man was operating as a manager of a branch which had a head office somewhere to which one could complain, then of course I would make complaint to the head office and look to them to take corrective action. But inasmuch as it would appear that this is a self-employed independent man who has behaved in this way, one has no redress of that kind, and therefore one has to seek one's redress by other means. For that reason, this report is going, amongst other destinies, it is going, amongst other addressees, it is going to the National Federation, National Association of Launderettes. I inquired of P.C. Russell at Langley Police Station if he would be kind enough to find out for me the name of Jesus Christ, alias the man without a name. And he was kind enough to obtain this information for me. And the man's name is Keith. I.T.H. Grove. 14, the... I must say to the readers of this document that I was so absolutely horrified by this experience that if this is typical of the present-day launderette behaviour, then I very much hope that my washerwoman's arm comes out of plaster very quickly, because I have absolutely no desire ever again to darken the threshold of any launderette establishment of the launderama kind. Local research has revealed that there are a number of establishments in this part of the Thames Valley, in various towns, all operating under the same name, Launderama, and yet apparently all independent of one another and not under a common management. I would like to emphasise that I am well known for being a person of great courtesy and civility. The last thing I ever do is to get involved in any form of a fray, or argument, or dispute, or unpleasantness, or anything of this kind. And so that you may better understand the sort of background I come from, I should perhaps tell you that I am a former pupil of Gordonstoun School, a retired regular officer of the Royal Corps of Signals, by parentage half German as well as half English. Gordonstoun School in my day was a German foundation. It had fled from Hitler. This is something little known. And added to all this, I suppose I could add that I was commissioned into Royal Signals on the same day, at the same time, and at the same place as Sir Geoffrey Howe, of whom I am now a friend of 42 years standing, and all this in 1946. I would assure the reader that I did absolutely nothing whatsoever to provoke this appalling and unspeakable attack on the part of this perfectly ghastly launderer. And I shall be very grateful for whatever corrective action the readers of this document may be able to bring to bear in order to ensure, one, that I receive an apology, two, that if I should have occasion to go to that establishment again, that I shall be properly and civilly treated, and three, that this kind of behaviour is not permitted to be shown to other members of the public. It does appear, from what the butcher's manager said, that I think I have given his name, Dave Wright, that this man is well known for his rudeness. So it may well be that there are other people who have suffered similar experiences. It is perhaps worth making the comment that from my observation, and from the observation that many others have made and have commented on to me, it is a fact that the tendency of the public in Britain is to be insufficiently critical. In other words, there is a tendency in this country to accept any degree of rudeness at all from shopkeepers, restaurateurs, and other people who provide a service, and any degree of badness of service, indeed of badness of food quality in restaurants. And there are many who somehow are so ashamed of, shall we say, of standing out above the others, that they do not wish to project an image at all, and they prefer to say nothing and meekly accept any amount of rudeness, any amount of bad food, any amount of bad service, rather than make any protest. So perhaps it is just as well that I have at long last made this protest, because who knows how many others have been similarly treated, and have been so meek and mild as not to be prepared to make protest. I shall be grateful for any information from the readers of this report as to any further developments that may arise out of this. You may be assured that until and unless it becomes made perfectly clear to me that there is not going to be a repetition of this outrageous behaviour, I shall never set foot in that establishment Launderama in Langley again, and furthermore, I shall make it my business systematically to inform everybody I know of precisely the way I have been treated in that place, so that they too should avoid going there.
The next is for the dramatic soprano. It's very interesting to note that a great many singers, no matter how charming, flexible, and nice their voice as it is, will strain every nerve to make themselves into dramatic sopranos, thereby ruining the very nice voice they already have. Because to be a dramatic soprano requires not so much the attributes of a singer as those of a successful auctioneer or hog caller. I mean, to blast your way through a Wagnerian orchestra, for instance, a beautiful tone is an absolute waste of time. You're much better off with the factory whistle or buzzsaw type of voice, with a good cutting edge. I am going to make an entrance for this number because it's a good idea to use shock tactics. What I mean by that is it's very effective to come in and stun your audience right away with a very loud bellow. You know, it has been established in science that a sufficiently loud noise can actually kill a bowl of goldfish. Did you know that? Right.
Presents Ode by John Furnival recorded by The Gentle Fire. This record is produced in connection with an exhibition of John Furnival's work at the Lane Art Gallery, Newcastle, from November 12th to December 11th, 1971. That was a recording of Ode by John Furnival. The score of this composition is included in the catalogue of John Furnival's Newcastle exhibition, published by Sealfrith Press.
Mon verre est sec et long, je sens des nuits chantent et mes trempliers. Si reflet je suffis pas, je tremble dans le son mi dévorant.
Yeah. Avec au creux des jambes une impatience, une prière, un rite, une révolution de votre corps qui rugit, camarade abreuvé ou rude qui m'a pris quand et comment perdre connaissance et me faire pousser la chanson nette dans la chapelle où il me prie. Assoiffé de tous les torrents d'hiver, je faisais rimer le boudoir et le rimel et le norrois et le bordel de toutes les rimes en oir. Et j'ai trimé, j'ai pillé mes rêves d'idéal pour t'habiller et t'animer de mes natures mortes et te couvrir de nudité, de thunes et de nuit et te voir entièrement dans le bal accrochant à ton tourbillon de faune mon rêve secret d'élection. Plongé dans la rivière et noyé sous les draps, je ne sais où tu voles, si tu piques. Nous nous sommes aimés dans les peupliers, dans la violence que le printemps imprime au premier tableau, dans les comètes et dans l'ordre oublié du désir que l'on ne peut briser. Loin sur l'eau et marier l'aube et le soir et réunis en une seule extase tous les oiseaux.